What's up, y'all? Welcome to Procurement Foundry's 10-Year Talks, 15-minute podcast interviewing battle-tested procurement supply chain professionals who have the scars to prove it. We ask the same five questions every week, providing you with chewable bits of expertise. I'm your host, Katie McEwen, the Procurement Girl, representing BuyerQuest, the most user-friendly procurement solution in the world. 10-Year Talks streams live every Friday on LinkedIn and is available anywhere you get your podcasts. I'm so excited to introduce you to our rockstar guest today, Adam Bull. He has over 20 years of experience in procurement supply chain and is currently the head of procurement at AstraZeneca. I've had the pleasure of knowing Adam for a couple years now. We've actually been able to meet in person, I think a couple times. So I'm really excited to have you on the show, Adam. Thank you so much.
Great to be here, Katie.
Great. So tell me a little bit about what you've been working on this year and what your focus is right now.
Yeah, so this year has been a big year of change for AstraZeneca. We have been heavily focused on market-based procurement, so each country operating independently, and we have put in a global category network structure. So we've always had a few global category managers, but about 90% of our commercial staff were in markets. So now we're going more to a three-tier structure of a global category network. Of course, maintaining those country management connections to connect with the business. And then also expanding our global procurement services structure, where we have three service centers around the world that provide contracting, RFP management, those sort of services to drive scale and efficiency. And so we've gone through quite a change this year, and it's been really exciting.
That's awesome. And nothing with COVID slowing you down? Everything's just moving forward and quickly?
Well, I mean, I've been home since March 9th. Really enjoying sitting in the same office every day. It's fantastic. Ready to not be in the same office every day. So AstraZeneca is one of the companies that's working on a vaccine. We are in phase 3 trials. We're very hopeful that our vaccine is one of the ones that could help the public. I obviously can't really comment on if we're going to be the first one to market, but I think it's on public record that we are already working on producing 2 billion doses. So be it us or be it one of our competitors, obviously I'd be thrilled to be part of a company that produces the COVID vaccine. And I'd be thrilled, a little less, I'm still pretty thrilled, if somebody else does it, frankly. So that's been really exciting. A lot of people on our team are currently being impacted. Trying to get that vaccine capacity secured so that we can make that many doses that quickly.
That's awesome. Well, congratulations. That's great. What an exciting time to work at AstraZeneca with all this going on.
Yeah, I don't know how to do any of this stuff to make a vaccine. So basically, I'm covering for people who actually know what they're doing. But it's really great to have a front row seat. And if regardless of the outcome, it's exciting to be at a company that's involved in that.
Exactly. I'm like you, just somebody come out with a vaccine. I don't care who it is. Just make it happen. That's exactly. Great. So Adam, you've obviously had a lot of success in this space. Who was that one mentor or coach or parent even that really inspired your road to success?
You know, I thought about this question and I don't have a one. So I've got a few people I could mention. You know, my first boss, Roger Tisch, was a guy. He was actually an IT guy. I used to be in IT before procurement, who really taught me to always look at an entire situation before you jump to a conclusion, which I think has been a really valuable lesson. I think a lot of people react before they get all the facts. I really benefited a lot from a lady named Marilyn Sherwin. She gave me my shot in procurement. I was a IT person who wanted to switch. I'd been an entrepreneur and I wanted to stay in the business side of things. And she gave me a chance to do it. If she hadn't given me a chance, I wouldn't be here. My current boss, John Dixon, guy's great. I learned a ton from him about managing up in a giant organization, about, you know, delivering and leading large teams. I don't have one, but I can name quite a few people who had influence. And I try to take lessons every place I go from people. You always find people with amazing skill sets out there, and trying to learn how they do what they do is always awesome.
Oh yeah. So what was that transition like from IT to procurement?
So, I mean, it wasn't very recent, but I had been an entrepreneur and I owned a chain of computer stores. That was my very first job actually. And it grew and then I sold it. So having that on my resume, it was a lot easier to get a job in IT. So when I did that, it basically the jobs were always had a strong technical bend, and I wanted to be more of a business type manager. So I had wanted to get back into something more entrepreneurial. And so finally I had an opportunity and Maryland gave me a shot and I loved it. It was indirect procurement back when I started in it in the early 2000s was pretty open season. It wasn't as defined as it, I'd say it is today. And it was a chance to really look at the business differently. You know, most of the people in a business, especially like in consumer products or pharma, are focused on revenue, and very few of us are focused on cost. So you can have a disproportionate impact on your organization focused on cost, because that's just not where most people's attention is. We have 5,000 sales reps in the United States trying to drive revenue, and then there's our little old group trying to save money.
Gosh. Yeah, exactly. That's a hard road to toe.
Yeah. So it's fun though, because you know, when there's 5,000 sales reps, no one sales rep is really making as big a difference individually as you can when you're, you know, 1% their size, you're going to be able to generate a bigger return on the cost side. So it's really exciting to do things that really help your business run better. So yeah, I think I was made for procurement. It's been a great place for me to be.
Sounds like it. Yeah. All your experience is just aligned to bring you here. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, obviously with the success you've had in procurement, I think you're onto something. So what would you say is the most innovative thing you're seeing right now in the space? What's really catching your eye right now?
You know, I thought about a lot of new technologies I could answer, but I think the thing that's going to be the most impactful for procurement professionals when we all go back is there's going to be a lot of challenge around the need for the modern office, the need to travel as much as we do, people working from home more and more flexible equipment. I think bring your own device will become even more popular as people really wonder why I need to be as tied to an office environment. That's not a commentary on where I work specifically, but I do think in general, you're already seeing a lot of large companies come forth with that kind of thing. And, you know, in my industry, there's a lot of meetings. And so I think trying to figure out how to replace that with virtual meetings, not only do you save money on all the travel and meetings expense, if you think about it, you can go from meeting to meeting to meeting without any logistics in between also. So if you're a speaker at an event and you really just came to speak, you don't lose 24 hours getting there and speaking and leaving. You pop on for an hour and you leave. So I don't think in-person meetings go away. But I think the driving change around how we do business is going to be the biggest opportunity that comes from COVID.
Yeah, I think you're onto something.
But it's not a very exciting technology. It's basically just trying to figure out how you can take what we already now know. I'm not going to say it works as well for me, but it works reasonably well. So to take that and drive that home as a way of doing business to save money. And it also protects the environment. There's a lot of inefficiency, everybody flying around so that they can shake hands. So yeah, I think that'll be the biggest change coming from this.
Exactly. Do you think we'll ever shake hands again?
Yeah, I don't think human interaction in person is going to go completely away either. The reason you knew me to talk to me here is because I've met you. And so it's a lot easier if someone's met you to know to trust them and give them time. I just think the balance of maybe how much time people spend on the road might change and how much time and how big offices are. I don't think the benefit of having some in-person interaction is just going to disappear overnight. I wouldn't say that. But I do think it'll evolve.
Yes, exactly. I mean, we need that interaction as humans, as a culture, to grow. And yeah, it's important, obviously. So yeah. How's it been for you during COVID, having to work from home and be in the same office every day?
Well, I did buy a new chair. I did find out that a lot of that ergonomic stuff they tell you at work is very important, because I never sat in this chair that long. And I got a sore back probably in a month from not having a very good chair. So getting a better ergonomic situation at home was really valuable. It's been, certain parts of my job are great. I found that people who don't sit with me, my office is in Wilmington, but I have staff in, you know, all over. So like the people in our office in Gaithersburg or in the UK or Latin America, they might've felt farther from me. And now that they have the same access to me everybody else does, so that in a way is nice. They also probably are more equal in meetings, so you don't have that effect where the people who are sitting with the person running the meeting seem to be doing all the participating. So those have been really positive benefits. The negative side is a lot of those little conversations you have during the day where you find out what's going on or take the pulse of things with a stakeholder, those are very hard to do. Now I've got to have a formal meeting. I got to show up with a deck. It's really hard just to get a quick 5-minute, hey, how are you doing? Did you hear about this? Is that going okay? And I did a lot of that, and now I can't. So positives and negatives for sure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And your kids are a little bit older, right? So you're not worrying about toddlers coming into the office when you're trying to work.
No, I've got other issues. So I've got a 22-year-old, a 20-year-old, a 17-year-old, and a 12-year-old. And right before the call, I found out that all the furniture I ordered that was supposed to show up in their apartment, which I just had to get because at the last minute they all got kicked out of their dorms, all started showing up today. And it's 5 days early. So after the call, I've got some personal procurement activities I might need to resolve because I'm going to have a bunch of furniture in front of somebody else's apartment. It worked out so good for me.
Get ready to raise hell, Adam. You're totally in your right. I support you. I got your back.
It works better at work where I spend millions and millions of dollars, where here I got one apartment worth of furniture and some poor FedEx driver's bringing it. I feel like it's going to go poorly, but that's here nor there. We'll live. Worse things are happening to people than my furniture debacle, so.
But you know what? This is your world, and it's all about perspective. So right now, you know what? You need to get ready for a fight. Get that furniture settled.
Just got to sort it. We'll figure something out. If we can't get them to take it back, we'll figure something out, right? That's life. Just make the best of what's going to happen. So if I can't get them to take it, I've got friends in San Antonio. I can call the building manager and see if he can just stick it in the place. Who knows? So just like in life, if you're a can-do person and you're going to find a solution, I could get really mad and scream at the vendor, which I may do, but probably not. I probably will try to convince them to work through this with me, and if it doesn't work, I'll be creative.
That
matters is that we get the result and that the furniture's there at the end.
Exactly. That's, yeah. Well, at the end of the day, it's going to fall back on you anyway, so you might as well be a little nicer. So, yeah.
Exactly.
So, Adam, can you tell us one unique thing about you that maybe people in this space really wouldn't know about?
Well, I really struggle with this question, too, because I think I'm kind of boring. I'm really into, like, history and culture and barbecue. And while all those things are wonderful, they're not very differentiated. So, I will just say that I have a very large knowledge of obscure things that most people would mostly not find interesting unless it's their particular obscure thing. And then they're always surprised I know about that one obscure thing. So obscure historical and cultural facts would probably be the one. And it's a boring answer, so I apologize.
So are you just trying to say you're a little nerd?
I'm a big nerd.
But I do
know. I am almost 6'8", and I play college basketball.
See?
I'm a big nerd.
I did not know that about you.
Definitely the nerdiest person on the basketball team by a long way.
But you helped them gain some history knowledge and some culture, you know? I'm sure they won't forget that.
Most of those guys didn't care. But fair enough. I you know, we all had a perspective.
So 6'8". So I'm sure like at trade shows and conferences, you've just got a bird's eye view of everybody.
You
know exactly who to avoid and who to go after.
It's more noticeable for other people. When you're the tall one, you kind of, that's just how you see the world. So whenever I see myself in pictures and I think of people being tall relative to each other, and so I'll see myself next to them and I'll be like, I am very large. But I don't really go around life thinking, oh, I'm very large. So I there's usually a larger size difference between me and other people that I'm not really conscious of. It did affect how I behave for sure, though. I definitely stand a little farther back and slouch a little farther down so as not to be unapproachable, because it is a little unusually tall. Like, kids usually start out horrified because they don't like anything that much bigger than their dad. So is what it is. But people get used to it, and that's all.
Yeah, well, we're friends on Facebook, and I love seeing pictures of your family, and it looks like your kids and your wife are all all pretty tall as well, huh?
No, my poor wife, she's only 5'5", so my kids pass her at a pretty early age. About 12, they pretty much are eye-to-eye with mom, and so she kind of has to rule through attitude more than size.
I bet she's got some sass to compensate. I'm sure she does just fine.
Yeah, she handles it. It doesn't bother her.
That's awesome. So last question, what's the one piece of advice that you'd give to those that are wanting to claw up the ranks and see some of the success that you've seen?
Yeah, so I would say the big thing is you can't settle. You have to always be learning and improving. If you are in the same job that you were like 4 or 5 years ago and nothing's changed, you probably need to do something about that. Mm-hmm. So even people I know that are comfortable, they're in a job they like, they're in a place they like, they're in a company they like. Even the people I know who are in a situation like that where they don't want a new job, they're always trying to get on special projects and be involved in new things. Like, don't let yourself be complacent, because one day if you don't do new things and you just are the exact same, then something happens to your company or in your life and you have to make a change. And all of a sudden your skills just don't fit. Also, it's pretty hard to stay stuck in and motivated and excited about a job when nothing ever changes. So I'm not saying you have to change your job every 4 or 5 years, but you need to change your situation, even if your situation is in a specific place, and keep learning new things and really continually challenge yourself. And some people are too afraid, in my opinion, to move or to take chances. And I would definitely encourage them to. I've benefited a lot from, I'm from Kansas. This is my lovely Kansas City background. I'm very proud of it. But I've lived in the Philadelphia area, the New York area, Los Angeles, and I've gotten to travel all over the world. And it was because I was open to go to take on those opportunities when really great opportunities came. So at some level, I encourage everybody to be brave, embrace change, and find opportunity for themselves in whatever size and scope they're comfortable with.
That's awesome. That's such great advice. Just be open to change. Yeah, I think a lot of us just get stuck in our own ways, and then the fear builds and we don't want to step out of that comfort zone. So that's great advice, Adam. I love that. Well, thank you so much for joining. I loved this conversation. I think it's going to be really helpful to a lot of people who are considering maybe a career in procurement supply chain or wanting to see some of the success that you've seen. So I really appreciate your time today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for everyone who listened in. We appreciate it. And I hope y'all go out there and have a very blessed week.